Welcome back to the SBS Sports Talk Show, presented by the Sports Business Society at UVA. I'm Michael Rockless, along with my co-host, Mike Popper. Again, past Will's bedtime, he's not here with us, but instead we have a Who's That?
Who's That?
segment with Ryan Toms. We're going to talk some World Series recap with him. We have a loaded show this week. Make sure you listen to this at 1.5 times speed. Hit it! All right, so we got a really good show. We're excited to give it, so we'll get going with our read option. Mike, what do you got?
I got you your favorite The Ringer article.
Little Bill Simmons action.
It's Kevin O'Connor.
It's his website.
Close enough. As you know, I'm a LeBron fan, if you ever read my bio on the website. And this article is about why LeBron should be more concerned about the Cavs. And kind of gets into whether the defense has gotten worse. You know, is the offense really going to be able to save the defense? Kind of talking about Tyronn Lue and how awful of a coach he is. Good read about, is LeBron's reign in the East going to come to an end?
I don't know. It's looking really iffy at this point. It's really hard to say you want to count LeBron James out.
I never will.
Yeah, you never will. And it's early in the season. He's kind of shown over the last several years, even dating back to Miami, that he doesn't really care if they get the one seed in the regular season, that they don't need that to go through the Eastern Conference. This is a really alarming start. They've lost, three games in a row by 15-plus points.
Right? Listen to these losses. Yeah, three in a row by 15 points. You're right. But the fourth loss was to D'Lo not playing on the Nets.
Yeah, and I see D'Lo, the Bulls. They beat the Bulls by seven. This is not
a LeBron. Got blown out by the Magic. They're 1-5 in their last six games with four blowouts by 20 points.
And they're all, they're not playing the Warriors. They're not playing, the Rockets, the Thunder. They're playing, the Pels, the Knicks, the Pacers. These are not teams that should be beating them. So it's kind of alarming. And now Tristan Thompson's injured.
He wasn't doing much anyway.
But Wade has been pretty ineffective, got moved to the bench. This is kind of alarming. You'd like to think that they're going to figure this out. But, we're looking at, a new challenger in the East. But maybe the Wizards, who knows.
The Celtics are playing well.
Are playing well. No Gordon Hayward, obviously.
They're still playing well.
But either way, it doesn't – if the Cavs don't turn it around, which, that's not unfeasible.
I'm still betting on them – to win the East.
But we can get a bad finals, though.
It looks like it's going to be a sweep. Warriors haven't looked that good either, though.
Yeah, you know what? Early in the season, it's hard to cast anyone off. I think a lot of these guys, they don't hit their groove till later on. And, even the regular season, it just is not that important. So you can give up some games. You can give up the one seed if you're Cleveland, and it's really not going to affect you at the end of the day. You just have to make sure that you're playing your best basketball in April. And right now, you don't even see the signs of that with them. They can't play defense.
Well, the scariest thing is that, they're going to get IT back, and their defense is going to get worse.
Right. It only goes down.
So, we'll wait and see. But what do you got for me this week?
Yeah, so my read option is something that is not yet in existence yet, but it's going to be a great series.
How have you read it then?
I haven't read it. I'm sharing it with the listeners. So on the SBS website, sportsbusinessuva.org, starting, I believe, the end of this upcoming week, we are going to be releasing daily just about a series post on the candidates for the NL MVP and just posting on why this player should win. So we have Ryan, who's going to be on with us later. He's one of the people co-heading this initiative, I guess, or this series. So to make it sound all professional. Yeah, but it's going to be great. So we have all the, there's going to be three finalists that get announced coming up. And there's a bunch of really good candidates for the National League. We saw that as the best race, between the Cy Youngs and the MVPs. The NL MVP is the most contested one. So we're really excited to get all the candidates, viewpoints and why they should win out there.
Yeah, well, since I haven't read the article, I can't really comment on it. But, everybody knows I'm the guru of baseball picks. We'll get to that. Mike, tell me who's in the running and I'll make a pick.
Maybe Ryan's a little bit better suited to do this. I know the best options, Ryan can correct me if I'm wrong. I think Stanton's got to be your number one. Bryce Harper would have been in there, but he got injured. Who else are we looking at? Arenado.
Charlie Blackman of the Rockies. Joey Votto of the Reds. He is getting a lot of support from the sabermetric community. And also Paul Goldschmidt of the Diamondbacks is getting a lot of support because he had good numbers and his team made the playoffs.
Yeah, so if I had to narrow it down to three, I'd go Goldschmidt, definitely Giancarlo Stanton, team to make the playoffs, and then probably a Nolan Arenado.
All right, so because I don't trust you, I'm going to go with Joey Votto to win then.
You're not even going to take one of my three guys. Yeah, if someone who's not on if someone who's not on a playoff team wins it, it's got to be Giancarlo Stanton, in my opinion. But we'll see, so make sure
the Reds didn't make the playoffs.
Well, neither did the Marlins, but the Reds weren't even close to the playoffs. So, yeah, so we'll...
Still, Joey Votto played well all season. I watched him every game.
Yeah, so we'll be getting that out there. Make sure you catch up with those and see who our writers think have the best chance to win the MVP.
All right, Mike, give me your drop it. Drop the mic for me.
Yeah, I'm pretty sad we're recording this on a Thursday. We're getting this out.
This is initial reaction, guys.
Yeah, this is a...
Probably first podcast
emergency,
you'll listen to that has this reaction on
emergency it. Deshaun Watson injury podcast. We're going to get this out Thursday night. I'm heartbroken. This is a terrible...
You hate to see it.
In practice. I mean, come on.
On a grass field, I heard.
So for those that have not heard, Deshaun Watson in practice today, today's Thursday, tore his ACL, is out
Thursday,
for the
November
season.
November 2nd.
Yep, he's out for the season. It's heartbreaking. I mean, I'm not a Texans fan, but my prediction at the beginning of the year was Deshaun Watson was this year's Dak.
Sadly, I'm going to have to call that prediction wrong now.
It's wrong now. Dak's healthy, but I mean, it's... That prediction, I think I underestimated the guy.
Oh,
I mean,
he was better than this year.
He was better than Dak last year. You know, the Texans were also my pick to go to the AFC Championship game. Obviously not going to happen now with Tom Savage.
That opens the door for me, but you hate to see it. Somebody playing so well, so electric.
Good young guy. Part of that QB young crop with your, you know, your Dax and your Carson Wentz.
And you pray that, you know, somebody mobile like him is able to get back to the form that he usually plays at. You're praying that he doesn't turn it into an RG3.
Yeah, I know. It's really sad. I feel terrible for him. I feel terrible for the Texans. Now, you know, Houston has the best night in sports.
I didn't even think about that.
It's the history of their, you know, their baseball franchise last night, and then they kind of have the sobering Watson news that kind of counteracts that.
They lose J.J. Watt for the season, Whitney Merciless for the season, and now Deshaun Watson.
And Chris Paul's out for a month.
Oh, even Chris Paul's out for a month.
At least they have James Harden, and they will forever have the 2017 Astros. But
I'm immortalized.
Yeah, so that, and you know, we'll get to this later when we talk about the trade deadline, but trade deadline's over. They can't go out and get, you know, called whoever you want that could have been available. Brian Hoyer, maybe, who ended up getting released. Just a heartbreaking injury, so I feel bad about it.
Comes back from the booth?
That was my original landing spot for Romo, was
the
Texans.
Texans.
Right, Texans.
But now they don't have the defense, so.
Right, so they stink now. Yeah, so it's over. All right, Mike, what's your drop the mic for me?
Speaking of stinking, I smell poop, Mike. It's UK footballs in the room.
Oh, no.
It's unbelievable.
We had it.
It's right there. You just have to beat BC. You have to beat Pitt. One of them.
No,
not even close.
Not even close. How did we trick ourselves into believing?
They did it to us, Mike. They catfished us.
They lured us in. We were all on. We're a football school.
We're there.
5-1. We were like
one
game away from the top. And now we lose BC at home. BC's a good team. Don't get me wrong. Pitt on the road is tough to swallow. You're looking at Georgia Tech at home, at Miami, yikes, or at Louisville, yikes. Home for Virginia Tech.
That's a loss.
Where are
we winning? Nowhere. We're not going to a bowl.
We gotta win this.
I think we're gonna sneak in as one of those 5-7 teams
with good academics.
Luckily, I don't even want to be in a bowl. Then
I want. We gotta win one.
We're not
Bronco,
going to
Bronco. Come on, man.
Bronco. Get out of here.
No.
Get out
no,
of town.
No. We gotta let him get his process in. This is what we've been talking about all year.
I'm reacting.
We're on the doorstep. And just, you know, it was a clumsy 5-1. You know, don't get me wrong. We thought we were good. You know, we were talking, hey, they beat bad teams. Like, what else do you need them to do? Well, I need you to beat a not horrendous team to get to 6 wins. But you know, we were feeling so good. It was like one more.
I was so just deeply excited to be part of a school that had
postseason football.
And now UVA is going to snatch that. Snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Let's see if the Hoos can come out 3:00 or 3:30 start time this week at home, Georgia Tech. This might be the game they have to get.
I hope we don't lose by a lot.
No, I hope we win.
No.
Let's get a performance.
Georgia Tech's a triple option team, right?
Yeah. That's them. We beat them at home 2 years ago.
500 yards of rushing.
This is it. If you want to go to a bowl game, UVA football, who's make a stand. All right, we're going to transition and talk about that one heck of a World Series that wrapped up last night. 7-game series. The Houston Astros win their first title in franchise history. I believe they'd been around for 55 some odd years like that. And they finally break through and win their first one. So now we're going to bring on Ryan Toms for a Who's That segment.
Who's that?
He's a second year in the college. He's one of our lead baseball editors and writers for SBS. So, Ryan, just take me through your initial reactions to the World Series, and we'll just get a good discussion going from there.
So, my first thought on the World Series is honestly probably the most entertaining World Series I have watched, other than, I guess you'd say 2009. No bias because I'm a Yankees
fan.
Yeah,
come on, man.
But,
why don't you...
Who played in 2009?
Yankees Phillies.
Ryan, you bring that up. Why don't you tell the readers a little bit about, you know, your background with the Yankees specifically?
So starting last February, I applied to write for the New York Yankees for the Bronx Bomber Ball, which is a blog that was started by a good friend of mine that goes to UNC Business School and is also run by a guy who goes to law school here by the name of Steven Erickson. And the three of us, we run it, and we cover Yankees news, highlights, recaps, previews, series. So if you have any interest in anything Yankees, check it out. We have the best coverage on Twitter and on the internet.
Yeah, what's your Twitter handle?
At Ryan Toms _.
Or how about the Yankees blog?
Bronx Bomber Ball. That's it.
Okay, cool. All right, so back to the World Series. Back to what happened over the last couple weeks.
So, the Astros, they're playing with a chip on their shoulder. And let's be real. Like I said, I'm a Yankees fan. And watching them beat the Yankees in Game 6 and 7 when they had a 3-2 lead, when they took that series, I wanted the Dodgers to win, but I knew the Astros, they're a team of destiny. Nothing was going to stop them. Even when they were up 3-2 and then lost the pivotal Game 6 to force a Game 7, there's nothing that was going to stop them from winning the World Series.
I predicted that. Okay, we wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the bullpen usage and a little controversy there. And we kind of saw bullpens coming in really early throughout the whole World Series. What did you guys think about that? Was that a good strategy? Did you like the way that that was happening? Do you think that's a trend going forward?
I think so. I think the teams that are making the World Series are built on super bullpens. If you notice, the teams that made it to the playoffs and made it to the World Series had successful bullpens, albeit Houston's bullpen was they struggled a little bit in the championship series and division series, but they ended up pulling it out in the World Series. So I definitely think that the starting pitchers were important, i.e. Justin Verlander going deep into games and Lance McCullers dominating his first start. But the bullpens, I think, are the key to success in the World Series.
Yeah, I thought it was just extremely interesting. This has been something that's kind of been ever-changing since the Royals back in 2014 and 15. The really interesting move to me was in games, I guess it was 2 and 6, with Rich Hill. So Rich Hill, not known as a guy who goes super deep into games, but both of those games had given up one run. I think they were losing to Verlander early in both of those games. But he gave up the one run, low on his pitch count, generally pitching very effectively. But Dave Roberts he took him out. That was part of the plan for Rich Hill, and he came out, I think, in the fifth inning of both of those games. And that really signaled just how reliant, you know, they were going to be on their bullpen. And for the Dodgers specifically, it was a detriment. I mean, they found out, and this always happens in the playoffs, is you find out who are the guys you can trust and can't trust. And I don't know, by the end of the series, I don't know if the Dodgers trusted just about anyone out there. Brandon Morrow pitched in every single game, got absolutely shelled that game. Game 5 in Houston, which was that really great walk-off 13-12. But even Kenley got battered around a lot. All of those guys ended up getting hit, and I think that was, you know, a byproduct of them coming into games so often and so early.
I mean, yeah, so do you think that, like, reliever loses kind of his stuff and his pizzazz when he's appearing in every game, and batters can, you know, kind of see that every game? As the series goes on?
I think the big thing for Morrow was just pitching every game. You know, there's only the 2 days off in between games 2 and 3 and games 5 and 6. For game 5, it was his third day in a row, and he'd pitched, you know, the 2 days before the off day. I mean, he was just tired. I don't know what you think, but he was gassed, and it showed. He got absolutely shelled when he came in game 5, and that cost him the game in the World Series.
Yeah, I'm going to start with what you said about Rich Hill. So Rich Hill is mainly a two-pitch pitcher. He has a sweeping curveball and then the fastball, which he uses just to supplement it. But when he gets through the lineup for the second or third time, and you've seen that curveball because that's the staple pitch in his arsenal, hitters definitely start to pick up on that. So I think that was Dave Roberts thinking of taking him out early, because if you look at his stats also, he's much better first and second time through the lineup. So I think that's where Dave Roberts went with that. Bullpen usage, if you think about it like this, Mike, that Brandon Morrow, like you said, pitched in every single game. So hitters were almost seeing more at-bats off of a relief pitcher than they had seen off of starting pitchers, which is, I think, one of the reasons why the managers in this World Series tended to go towards starting pitchers in big spots rather than the relievers they used for 162 games over the course of the season.
I think that's a great point. I mean, we saw Charlie Morton was the guy who shut it down for four innings at the end of last night's game. But even Morrow, once he had that day off, I know he came into a really high leverage situation in game six and shut it down. And then in game seven, he was fine. I don't think he didn't give up any of the runs. Darvish gave up all of them. But no, I mean, you know, they just wore down that bullpen. They're bringing guys in super early. And that, you know, I think that hurt him at the end of the day. It's kind of an interesting thing. And then, like you said, with the Astros, they won game seven of the ALCS with McCullers getting him four innings. And they won game seven of the World Series with Morton, both starters, getting him four innings to close out those games. So really interesting stuff there.
Yeah, so talking about, you know, hurting themselves, Darvish is better than Kershaw, and that's why he got the starting game seven. Is that what happened?
He's not better than Kershaw.
He's not better than Kershaw.
So why did he start?
So, Ryan, you want to hear me out on before we dive into why did he start or not. The Houston Astros, they won the World Series because at the trade deadline, July 31st, they decided to be losers and not go after Yu Darvish. The Dodgers were the winner, so to speak, of that decision. And then the Astros, of course, later on, out of Verlander, who gets them to the World Series, didn't win them game in the World Series, saved the bullpen a little bit, but Darvish was really the reason why the Astros, you know, they won games three and seven with Darvish not even getting through two innings. Before we even talk about the decision to start him over Kershaw, I mean, how crazy is that?
Yeah, like Justin Verlander was acquired by the Astros literally a minute before the August 31st waiver deadline. And the fact that what turned teams off at the July trade deadline was the fact that he kind of had a marginal start to the season. His contract was a long term and was going to cost whatever team acquired him a lot of money, along with decent prospects. So the Dodgers went for more towards the rental aspect and getting Darvish. And Darvish had a pretty solid season up to that point.
And he was pitching really well with the Dodgers since they got him.
Exactly. And like you said, I don't think the Astros won the World Series. Never, I don't think they make it to the World Series without Justin Verlander.
No, he won them the Yankee Series.
He did.
I mean,
he won the MVP for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so going back to Mike's original question, and I said this last night, I mean, how did they, if they were willing to use Clayton Kershaw, he ended up pitching, like three or four innings? Four innings. How come this guy isn't starting? I mean, that is a crazy decision.
So, honestly, I'm with you. It makes no sense to me. So, the plan for Dave Roberts with Yu Darvish was for him to give three or four solid innings and then build a bridge to Kershaw or Jansen. So, my opinion is that he struggled really bad in the first inning, which, like you said, he probably shouldn't have been there. It should have been Kershaw starting it, but nevertheless, he shouldn't have even went out for that second inning. It should have been Kershaw pitching that second inning. And I don't understand that if Dave Roberts' original plan was to only have Darvish pitch three or four innings, and Kershaw went four innings last night, why didn't he just start? It makes absolutely no sense to me.
I think that's what cost him the World Series right there. I remember just saying, you know, watching the game, that when Kershaw came in, I mean, it was 5-0 at that point. I'm like, Kershaw's going to be lights out. And one of my friends, who's not a huge baseball fan, he asked me, you know, he said, how long can Kershaw go? And I'm like, I think Kershaw could go the distance. It's not going to matter. And that's exactly what happened. It's just an interesting decision. Like, the thing for me, and, you know, I've said this, if you're going to put Kershaw in there, and I think if he was pitching that well, he could have gone deeper into the game. They took him out for a pinch hitter, ultimately. Mm-hmm. If you were willing to throw him, just start him. Give him his chance. I mean, I know it was only 2 days rest, but the dude was ready. He's pitching lights out last night. I mean, that really hurt him.
So I saw a tweet from Sam Hinkie, the tank master of the 76ers, says, I love it when a plan comes together. And it has a picture of the 2014 Sports Illustrated, now coveted Sports Illustrated cover, where it predicted the Astros to win this World Series. So kind of talking about, you know, the full circle of the Astros tank and how it came together, if you guys could elaborate on that, whether you think that's, you know, the plan going forward for other teams, are they going to follow this blueprint of what the Astros have done? Or do you think it's just, you know, the Astros did it better than anybody else could, and it's going to be only a one-time thing?
Yeah, before we dive into that, I do want to proudly say that I read that article back in 2014.
Did you agree with it? Probably. You're going to say yes.
No, that's an unfair thing to say. I don't remember specifically how I felt about it. I think at that point, and this is why it's such a, like, amazing article to look back on, to that point, they really didn't, I don't even know if they had Correa. They might have just drafted him. But it really was, like, very, very early stages, and they really didn't have any talent, seemingly, in the pipeline. I mean, Altuve was there for a lot of those teams, but, like, Altuve wasn't a special player until, you know, maybe right after that. But no, I just remember reading it, and it's just amazing to see it come to fruition. I've always been a Tank guy, whether the Nationals have done it to some success, the Phillies are in the midst of it now, the Astros, obviously, and the Royals won a World Series off of it, essentially, too. The Astros, your latest example of it. I mean, Ryan, following this team, as I know baseball fans have, since they really started to bottom out once they transitioned to the American League, I mean, how amazing is it to see them come from where they were, losing 100 games 3 years in a row or 4 years in a row, to this, where they're legitimately the best team in baseball?
It's crazy, Mike, because the Astros were the laughingstock of the league. Bud Selig, the former commissioner, moved them to the American League in order to get 15 teams in each league. And at that time, they weren't a very good team anyways, and they were put into an AL West division with the Rangers.
Right,
and
to try and drum up the rivalry.
And the Angels. And like you said, they lost 100 to 110 games 3 years in a row. They were the laughingstock. They stood no chance. But then they came under new ownership, focused on an analytical approach into building a team from the ground up, which is what was their plan to get to this point. And that's what they did. They had to suffer 3 or 4 years of pitiful baseball in order to get where they were. They got first-round picks. They got Correa. They got Bregman.
Springer,
who won the World Series MVP.
Yeah.
And then what they did with the guys like Mark Appel, who didn't pan out. They traded him for their closer, Ken Giles.
How about Brady Aiken, though? Guy, they didn't even sign him because of the elbow. I mean, they blew, mm-hmm. Mike, to people that don't follow baseball as much, two of those first overall picks, they completely blew. Those guys never even played in the pros for them, and it still worked out. I mean, just an amazing run by the Astros.
Anybody got anything else to say about, you know, just in general, the World Series greatness? We kind of let off with this, but was this the best World Series you've ever seen? Better than last year?
Oh, but Game 7 last year really has a special place in my heart because of the Rajah Davis home run and the Chapman blowing the lead and then the rain delay and Jason Hayward yelling at his team, getting them back together. That has a special place in my heart. But as a series, this is probably the best World Series I've ever watched in my lifetime.
Yeah, I don't know. This one last year, both really good. And I know four baseball games stand out in my mind as the four best baseball games I've seen in my entire life when you factor in the magnitude. Game 6 of 2011, Cardinals-Rangers, David Freese, the hero in that game. Game 7 of last year, which we alluded to. And then we got two games from this series, Game 2 and Game 5. Overall series, tremendous. Good baseball, all seven games. They were all tight games, maybe not Game 7, but it was a Game 7. Played well. You know, the game was a well-played baseball game. Amazing series. Great way for baseball to finish the year. So really, really happy with how that turned out. And congratulations to the Astros. Yeah, all right, Ryan, thanks for, you got one more?
Yeah, I think it was the best World Series I've ever watched.
The first?
I watched Game 7 of the Cubs World Series, but, you know, just in general, the quality of the games.
You appreciated it.
I appreciated
it. We also got you hip to it, because I forced you to talk about it for the last, like, 4 weeks.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad it's over, so, all right, let's move on to the better sport, football. Whirlwind.
We're doing something.
The energy comes back into the room as football gets talked
about.
Yeah,
so before we transition, thank you, Ryan,
for coming on.
Great job.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Yeah, and so for football this week, we're going to do our NFL recap preview when we go to the All 267. Because our main topic, as you alluded to, is the trade deadline. Best trade deadline in NFL history.
Probably most active trade deadline in NBA history.
NFL,
sorry.
Yeah, you're getting them mixed up. That's understandable.
Understandable, because it felt like an NBA trade.
So
that's
what
it was.
Yeah, let's start with we don't have a ton of time here. Let's start with the biggest trade. Jimmy Garoppolo
to the 49ers. Best thing that's happened to the Giants this season.
Well, I don't disagree, but Kyle Shanahan was quoted as saying he doesn't know if they're going to play him this year. This trade wasn't... Yeah, you didn't see that?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, this trade it's not about this year. It's about the future. Now,
well, Kyle Shanahan, why don't you come talk to me? Play the man!
They don't need a quarterback anymore.
Yes, they do!
They don't need to draft one anymore.
But they still gotta play him to see if he's worth franchise tagging. Tag him?
They're gonna make their decision. I think they love the guy. But no, here's the thing.
Okay.
So the trade's about the future. For both teams, really interesting implications. The Patriots, obviously, Bill Belichick didn't want to do this, held on to Garoppolo for as long as he could until, you know, he was a half a season away from requiring a franchise tag to keep him. And, you know, the Patriots go from the best quarterback situation, Brady with a great backup in Garoppolo, even down to Brissett before the season,
right,
to now it's, and Hoyer's no slouch, but Brady, 40 years old, if he gets injured, I mean,
well, you got to think now that, that Belichick believes Brady can play well into his 40s.
You have to think that.
Because
Brady looks so good.
I mean, but what are they, if they use this pick on a second, on a, this second round pick on a quarterback?
High second round pick, at least.
That's an interesting,
who knows what
point
they're going to do. They've been using their picks the last couple of years to kind of push for that end of Brady's tenure. You know,
right,
they saw them trade
never come
first rounder for Cooks. Right.
Yeah.
But so maybe they'll do something similar to that. But, you know, transition, I mean, it's just a very interesting trade from that for them long term. You got to think it indicates Brady's going to stay
right
for a while. And then for the 49ers, I mean,
wonderful.
If you believe in Jimmy Garoppolo, from, of course, he's with the Patriots last year, from what you saw of him in those 2.5 games, everything you hear about him, Patriots guy, you know, he's learned under Tom Brady, you know, one of the best. I mean, if this guy,
is a steal.
This trade is going to be unbelievable for them. And it's not only because now they have Jimmy Garoppolo, but now they have a top five pick that they can use to either get more picks to help Jimmy Garoppolo or get a absolute blue chip player to help Jimmy Garoppolo.
I mean, they also have the Bears haul from,
right,
from Trubisky.
And they also have, you know, renowned offensive coach who got Matt Ryan an MVP, looks
right
better by the week this year, Kyle Shanahan. And he likes Garoppolo. He had him as his number two quarterback going into that draft behind Derek Carr, who those were the two best guys from that draft. I mean, or maybe Garoppolo, but I mean, an absolute steal of a trade for them.
John Lynch has looked great as
yeah
a GM so far.
Yeah, and you
I think
know,
he's doing a great job.
And the amazing thing, you know, from their perspective is just, if this guy pans out, I mean, you got franchise quarterback. The easy, I mean,
and
that's huge.
And they've invested in the D-line for the past couple of years.
Yeah, those guys had a good game against the Eagles.
Reuben Foster, you know, might have slipped, arguably the one of the best linebackers in the draft, if not the best, fell because of some character issues. But that team, you know, that they could be working their way back, you know, to the Harbaugh days of you know, 49ers football that everybody likes to see. But let's move on now.
Let's talk about the two NFC teams that made big moves. The two contenders
the
in
the
NFC. The
two contenders. Okay. Well, let's talk about, you know, No Knees over here that got traded from the Dolphins to the Eagles. And if you don't know, No Knees is Jay Ajayi. What do you think as an Eagles fan?
Yeah, so I woke up to the news on, I guess it was Tuesday morning. And obviously, if you're an Eagles fan, it's a very exciting trade. You trade basically what amounts to is a fourth round pick.
Conditional to move up.
It's the second of their three fourth-round picks. So
It's
the second of the three. That part doesn't really matter. That was in the details.
Right.
But it's an exciting trade. They don't give up much for the guy. He's young, 24 years old. He has some locker room potential issues, some knee issues.
No, he has lots of knee issues.
Well, the Eagles doctors checked him out. They've had a pretty good history. He's cheap, less than $1 million for this half season and next season. Really exciting move. Skeptical about in-season trades and the effect that they have, but if you're the Eagles and you're looking at just from a complete team standpoint, you obviously lose the offensive tackle and Peters, which really hurts, but run a three-down running back when Sproles went out, someone who can catch passes and block is what they didn't have, and this J.J. is just a talented guy. It's a really great trade, and the amazing thing is, if you're an Eagles fan, you traded Sam Bradford for Derek Barnett and J.J.
Oh, the Sam Bradford trade, it was just unbelievable.
This is the fruits of the labor.
Considering what Garoppolo went for.
Right, that's even more amazing.
That's what just is mind-boggling. I don't know if Jay Ajayi is as much of a receiving threat as he
is. Not that he's a receiving threat. He did catch 100 passes at Boise State. So the Dolphins didn't use him that way.
Yeah. I don't know. He had a couple really good games last year. Three games kind of made up. Like 30% of his yards.
And I'm not crazy.
I don't think he's going to be, you know, a game changer, but I think, you know, for a team that arguably looks the scariest in the league and probably has the easiest path to the Super Bowl, it's a move you like to see them make. And you know, Howie Roseman has been a great GM in these trades, kind of, you know, getting players for cheap, giving up players
when they're young.
He's doing well. I mean, like to see the trade happen.
I don't know if Eagles fans are going to notice this as much, but Tim Jernigan. Trey moved up in the third round to pick up Tim Jernigan, which is an absolute steal. Trade a third round pick and half and a full season of Jordan Matthews for Darby, who hasn't played but is going to be really good when he comes back in a couple weeks. And then you trade a fourth round pick for Ajayi, who's 24. I mean, all those guys are like 25 or less. So really good move for them. Doesn't put him over the top. It may or may not, but it's an exciting trade. You love to see what the Eagles do. The real part about this trade that really makes you feel good, get to December, you get to January, where the Eagles will be playing. You have two bruising backs down your throats that are going to wear down defenses. Let's transition now to the other NFC contending team, or at least the one that gives the Eagles the biggest threat, or if you want to throw that the other way around.
I think
Seahawks
the other way around,
make a big move. Dwayne
love
Brown.
It. I love it.
You love it because now the Eagles aren't the favorites anymore.
Stamping of approval from Mike Popper on this trade. You love to see, you know, I don't know who the Seahawks GM is. But
Schneider
goes out. You know, he picks out Dwayne Brown.
Hefty now, price, second round pick plus a player.
Oh, Jeremy Lane's not even in the deal.
Oh, he's not in the deal. So they ended up trading a third, right? Did they up it to a third? I think they upped the third and the Texans turned a fifth.
Right,
something like that.
Something weird. But, I mean, think about Russell Wilson now. He's got a solid left tackle.
Now their left tackle is better than the Eagles' left tackle.
Exactly. And you know, their offense has been clicking lately. Their defense hasn't. You know, they let up 35 to you know, sorry about this, but Deshaun Watson. But you like to see the defense, you know, get back into form, and when it does, with the addition of Dwayne Brown on the offense, that's a scary, scary, scary team.
Yeah, I agree.
That's a team you don't want to face in January because they're always playing their best football.
They always are, and even, you know, beginning of the season, we had talked about how bad their line looked and how much that could be a problem for them. Huge upgrade there. You know, Dwayne Brown's an older player, but no reason that he isn't going to be really good for them, and I think that just solidifies, you know, their weakest spot and makes them a really good team if he fits in well.
The only thing is it will take him a little while to get up to speed.
That's okay.
7 week holdout. So
yeah, but he played really well against Seattle last week in Seattle, and then he came back to Houston and flew right back to Seattle. But no, that's a great trade for them.
I hope he's got an American Airlines
frequent racking up his miles. Yeah. But that's, you know, Seattle's looking good. I think the Eagles and the Seahawks are on a crash course for each other. Whoever stadium that one will be played, those look like the two teams.
That game in early December is going to be really big.
It could be really big because I just don't know about the Vikings and the Saints. Even the Falcons, I don't know about them. And Dallas without Zeke, potentially.
Good.
I think it's the Eagles and the Seahawks are easily the cream of the crop out in the NFC. So big moves for both of those teams. A little other trade fodder. You had Kelvin Benjamin go to the Bills.
I love it.
Nothing too significant there. And then,
too significant. Taylor now has a big target to throw to.
About Jordan Matthews and Zay Jones.
They're not big target to throw to.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bills look good, man.
Bills look like a playoff team. Sean McDermott obviously coached the defense for Carolina the last several years. So
he's going to use him better than Mike Shula.
Yeah, so he's getting his Carolina guys there. And then, of course, the hysterical Cleveland Browns. And Bengals.
The
AJ McCarron trade.
They are
which funny enough, you know, the Browns were going to trade more for AJ McCarron than the 49ers traded for Jimmy Garoppolo. Cleveland Browns.
Hugh
Browns.
Jackson came out and said, I am relieved that this trade didn't go through.
Yeah.
So there's so much disconnect between the top and the bottom. The Browns, I had some hope for them this season. I think they clean house. Honestly, I think they do.
I think they don't have a choice but to do that. All right, so that is going to wrap it up for our two main segments for this week. We're going to go into our all 267 recap. We got big news.
Uh-oh.
I went 11-2 this past week to Mike's 7-6 on the season. We are tied at 68-50. How you feeling?
Oh, it's a rough one.
It's rough. I picked up four games. I like the way
never
that sounds.
That would happen.
Yeah.
Never thought I would, you know, I would be back on the level of being tied with Mike. It's kind of like a stake through the heart. But you bet your bottom dollar I'll be back out there next week. 11-2, stamp it.
I
don't even know. Well,
there's 13 games. You're perfect. Yeah, I'm in trouble cuz my champion quarterback's out. My semifinalist in the AFC quarterback as of today out. So I'm a little, I got some damaged goods out there for my teams. I'm looking ahead to this week, week 9, the Eagles' last game before the bye week. Great opportunity to go 8-1 into their bye, which
would
be beautiful.
Yeah, you gotta be careful though. Brock Lobster coming out.
Yeah. I'm excited.
He's gonna have a good game, I feel. You know, You like to see the guy just light it up. He's got weapons. Emmanuel Sanders should be back. That D-line taking on the depleted.
It's not depleted. Depleted, it's one guy.
The depleted Philadelphia Eagles O-line. I don't know. I smell an upset.
We got some horrific primetime games this week. Don't even bother. God. You got Buffalo at the Jets tonight, Oakland at Miami on Sunday night, and then Monday night is Green Bay at, or Detroit at Green Bay, no Aaron Rodgers. That's bad, but 4:30 game this week. Romo returns to Dallas, announcing his first Cowboys game. Chiefs at the Cowboys. I think looking at the schedule, that's your best game of the week.
That's got to be the best game of the week.
And but unfortunately, no. Well, depends who you are, but no Zeke Elliott. That'll ruin the watching experience a little bit. But
nah, I mean, he deserves
I'm not overly complaining about him if he does end up getting that suspension upheld. I think we find that out tomorrow.
Yeah, they're ruling on it tomorrow. I think.
Yeah, real quick, got a worst pick for us this week, Mike. I know for one. I don't really have one. I have the Jets beating the Bills. I don't hate it.
Yeah,
I have the Giants beating the Rams. I also don't hate it.
I would probably go with my worst pick if I had to choose when I like all of them. You know, just probably Giants at Rams at Giants. I just don't really, you know, Jackrabbit's out. Gurley.
Yeah, you have the Broncos beating the Eagles, but that's a better pick.
That kind of lack of, you know, ability or reason kind of shows why I don't really have any, you know, bad picks this week.
Yeah. Good luck with the Broncos against the Eagles. That'll do it for us this week. Thanks for listening, guys.
I'll be right there. We like sports and we don't care who knows. I'm shooting hoops to the Super Bowl. We like sports and we don't care who knows. Football, tennis, hockey, golf.